I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for a visit with Brad Epperly, Christiansburg, Virginia's Director of Parks and Recreation at the city's trendsetting Huckleberry Park. The 50-acre park features all-inclusive amenities, including a state-of-the-art dog park, special event locations, and multi-purpose playing fields for baseball, soccer, lacrosse, and other field sports. Most fascinating are the interactive outdoor activities, fine-tuned specifically for kids with limited mobility. There's even a swing set specifically designed to accommodate wheelchair-bound kids. Come along and join the conversation with Epperly to discover just how Huckleberry Park has earned its mark as a National Parks and Recreation trendsetter. Afterwards, we'll meet up with Master Gardener Beth Umberger in Christiansburg at the Montgomery Museum of Art and History's Legendary Gardens. Brad Epperly. Here we are, Christiansburg, Virginia, a brand new public park. This is really cool. Very different than most parks that you come to. Explain how you reinvented the interactive experiences for kids.
Christiansburg Huckleberry Park is just what we've tried to do is build a park that is something for everyone. And through that, we've been able to provide an all-inclusive playground that has worked very well for children of all abilities to be able to provide an inclusive play and an opportunity for families to be able to come to the playground, enjoy themselves, and there's a little bit of everything for everyone.
One of the things that most fascinated me was for the non-ambulatory person.
Yeah, everything is zero depth, and we have accessibility throughout the playground area. And when we designed the playground, that was one of our big emphasis that we wanted to make sure we were able to do because we wanted to make sure that from an inclusive standpoint, it was inclusive for everyone.
Talk for a moment. You're wheelchair bound. You can still do cool activities here.
Yeah, everything is designed. We have ramps throughout the playground area so that wheelchairs, mobility devices will have access. Our splash pad is zero depth, and we do provide a couple plastic wheelchairs so that folks will not have to worry about getting their mobility devices wet when they're interacting with the splash pad.
And then that swing, that's really cool, where you actually go up the ramp and put your wheelchair in the swing.
And that's sort of a new innovative way of swinging from an inclusive standpoint. You can provide opportunities for individuals with wheelchairs and mobility devices. Basically, it's called a rock and flow, and so they can go inside there. Their friends and family that maybe aren't in a mobility device can sit along side by side with them, and they can swing back and forth so that they get that interactive play.
Jason, you have the swing sets where there's that harness that swings down and protects the kid.
It does. There's a couple different items there in those swing sets. One is designed for children that maybe have a little bit weaker upper body strength, and it provides a little bit extra support there. We also have a parent-baby swing so that it can be an interactive swing together between a parent and a child. And then we also have a swing that is a group swing that everyone can jump on and play with as well.
That's really cool. Talk to us about some of the other activities there that are kind of reinventing the public park experience.
So when we designed this, we wanted to really be state of the art. We've worked with a very great playground specialist when designing this. We have a Yelp sonar system, and that is an interactive play item that has a number of different games that folks can play with.
Walk over there.
That'll be good. Yeah. We also have what's called the Toro system, which is a mini soccer type game, which is, from our understanding, the only one in the United States at the current time. And then on the lower section of the playground, we have a challenge course as well as a 40-yard dash, and those are both digitally timed. We want to be able to provide opportunity for our middle school and high school age students to be able to play. And then we have outdoor fitness for adults, as well as a rehabilitation area for folks that maybe are coming off of knee surgery, shoulder surgery, those types of things. Mm-hmm. We're considered a national demonstration site for outdoor fitness as well as inclusive play, so we're very proud of that.
And then you were mentioning the activities over there where a kid might be playing, and adjacent their strength training exercises for adults.
That is correct, and that gives everyone an opportunity to be able to recreate mm-hmm. and to be able to play. And so now we're at the Sona Arch, and this is sort of interactive.
Blue versus green.
So basically blue versus green. There's a number of different games that come through, but this is a dancing game, and there's colors and numbers on the platform, and so it tells you to go to blue or green, and
so
they want you to dance.
The blue. I don't know.
I don't know if I'm too good of a dancer.
So it's reacting to your dancing
yes,
and your foot
it does.
Movement.
That is correct.
And then you got some competition over
yeah.
there on green.
He might have quicker feet than me.
That's pretty cool.
No dancing? The next round begins in 5, 4, 3.
But so, yeah, that's sort of how that works, very much so. Some of the other items that we have here at the park is our athletic facility at our multipurpose fields.
Oh, yeah. We had lacrosse going on here this morning.
We had lacrosse going this morning. We have a fairly large soccer event tomorrow. We have 4 artificially surfaced fields that the lines for lacrosse, soccer, and football. Mm-hmm. And we went a step further when we developed the athletic fields, and we actually put base anchors in the field so that we could also play diamond sports there as well.
Girl
so
softball.
we can play girls softball, women's softball up to the college level, mm-hmm. and then baseball up to about 12 years old.
That's pretty cool for especially a town your size.
Yeah.
The population is what, 20,000?
23,000.
23,000.
We're very excited. You know,
you're a trendsetter in outdoor public park experience nationwide.
That is our goal. We want to be a recreation destination mm-hmm. and a trendsetter. And, you know, just this weekend alone, we have adult volleyball tournament happening at our recreation center. We have a baseball tournament with 50-plus teams at our baseball complex. And as mentioned, we just got through with the lacrosse tournament here at the Christiansburg Huckleberry Park and have a soccer event tomorrow. And that's the way it is most every weekend, mm-hmm. along with swim competitions at our aquatic center. So we're very proud of that. Happy to be that sports destination.
And is there interplay with the school district?
We do. We work very closely with the school system. And, you know, when we were developing this park, we also wanted to look at what can we do besides athletics. And, you know, because you want to be able to provide different opportunities for the folks that are here. And so the playground being here is a huge asset as well. But being able to see the green spaces and those types of items is also very wonderful for our area.
And there's a whole another dimension that we haven't talked about yet, and that's the world of doggies.
Yes.
That's really cool.
We love our dog park. I think it's one of the best anywhere around here. When we went into the process of designing it, we looked at it and we wanted to be state-of-the-art with that as well. And we went to an artificial surface of the dog park, so you're not having to worry about mud and wet mulch and those types of things and carrying debris and bacteria back home into your vehicles. So it's artificially surfaced, but it's designed specifically for dogs. It has an antimicrobial material in that basically breaks down bacteria and those types of things, and it's one of the cleanest parks that you'll ever see.
That's so cool.
When we were developing this park, one of the big emphasis for us beyond the inclusivity standpoint was being sure that we had a balance of active recreation and passive recreation, and I think we've done a really good job of that here. We have a number of active locations and active things here at the park, but we also have a number of acreage of just open green spaces and those types of items so folks can come and just enjoy themselves sitting on a park bench, reading a book under a shade tree, or grabbing a picnic, those types of things. Moving forward, a couple of the items that we will be looking at as we move forward with the park over the years to come. The first thing is we're going to develop more parking. It has been overwhelmingly popular, which is a great thing, and we've realized that additional parking is something that is going to be necessary for us, and actually, fortunately, our town council is already working in that direction to be able to help provide that. We also, in the near future, will be building and developing outdoor pickleball courts. That is one of the fastest growing sports in the nation at the current time, so we will be developing that. And then in years to come, our next step would be to develop a permanent amphitheater to where we can do a lot of different musical acts, drama, play, those types of things.
And you have the land?
We do. Yeah. We do have the land, and we have it set up. We actually have this conceptual drawings already set up and made for whenever the financial backing comes for that.
Talk to us about water for a moment. I see retention ponds down there.
Yes, yeah, so with a park of this size, one of the biggest things when you get into development and disturbance of land is stormwater and those types of items. And that's become such a crucial aspect in any type of development that we work on. So we work closely with our engineering department here to develop those stormwater aspects. And actually, we will use them as educational tools in the years to come. A little bit later on this month, we're actually having a spring into summer event. And one of our items is a tour of the park to talk about some of the environmental aspects of the park and really the sustainability of items, and stormwater is a big part of that.
So that's retention for heavy downpours.
That is correct.
Do you have storage of water?
So we do not have storage of water. Basically, the water that we have here currently at the park is the town water that is serviced through our town's water authority.
And recycling?
We do have recycling here at the park, and obviously solid waste as well.
To learn more about your world,
go to our website, which is christiansburg.org, and you would click on the link of Parks and Recreation. When you click on the link of Parks and Recreation, you'll be able to see all the different types of programs, facilities, and trails that we have within our recreation world here in Christiansburg. You also could call our office number at 540-382-2349 and speak to anyone at our office, and we'll be glad to help you in any way that we can. My name is Brad Epperly. I'm the Director of Parks and Recreation, and really look forward to serving our citizens and also the guests that come into our area.
Brad, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
This
thank
has
you.
Been really illuminating. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Christiansburg, Virginia. We'll see you here. Master Gardener Beth Umberger.
We're in Christiansburg, Virginia at Montgomery Museum Garden. I live in Christiansburg.
And I understand you're a master gardener.
And also a master naturalist.
How'd that happen?
Just happened. I like to learn.
You've always been a naturalist then. When you were a kid, you had a fascination.
When we grew up around here, you went barefoot in the summer and you were outside all the time. Even in the evening, you'd be outside.
How did your life progress?
Went to local college, Virginia Tech, and then I got married. We lived in North Carolina for 2 years, and my husband went to Duke, and then we went to live in Brooklyn.
Brooklyn? Wow.
My husband loves jazz, so that was a great opportunity for us. He did an internship, and so that worked out really well. And we ended up staying there for a while.
But you came back home?
Yes.
When did you come back to the county?
1975.
And what brought you back?
The mountains.
Uh-huh. The Blue Ridge?
Yes, yes.
So you just couldn't resist. You were drawn back.
Yes. If I was going to raise a family, I would like to raise it here. We loved Brooklyn. It was really hard for us to leave. It was harder for us to adjust coming back than it was to go in the city.
Oh, interesting. Why did you like Brooklyn?
Well, the people were great. There's lots of cultural things to do. The restaurants, all the cultures you learn from. It was always stimulus. Mm-hmm. Didn't have to have a car. You could ride the subway.
Right. Yeah. So you came back in the 70s. And you kind of reacclimated. And then what did you do?
We were foster parents to at-risk kids for a while. Then we had our own kids. I did a little bit of homeschooling, substituting, working in garden centers, working in childcare. Ended up doing this garden.
Plants are what ultimately got you, putting your fingers in the soil, huh?
Everything I've done with kids, I've always done something with plants, yeah. My first public garden was in Brooklyn, New York.
Oh,
the
really?
Hospital I worked in.
Oh, cool. Tell us a little bit more about your gardening here, what you focus on.
I focus on native plants because we're losing biodiversity. 40% of our insect population has decreased. That means, and the bird population too, because the birds depend on them to feed their babies. Right over there, the bluebirds are busy gathering caterpillars. So they need the host plants. 90% of our insects depend on native plants. And so if you don't have the native plants, you don't have those insects. So the garden is full of host plants for those insects.
Interesting. It's implicit that part of your mission continues teaching and interacting with kids. I know that you have to bring kids out here.
Well, I'd like to do more kids, but we mostly do adults. Our mission as a master gardeners is to provide best practices and information, and also master naturalist. National naturalists, we deal with everything that's native to Virginia. Salamanders, birds, snakes, plants, the whole nine yards.
And you guys get together and brainstorm?
Yeah, we stay really busy. The master gardeners are very active and throughout the community, doing lots of volunteer work. And they have vegetable gardens in schools. They have one of the things we're doing in the garden is called Grow a Row. So we're incorporating in the native garden where we grow vegetables to give away. We did that during COVID. We cleared out two beds and grew some vegetables. And if we get the opportunity to work with kids, yes, we do.
And you have teaching seminars and sessions that you do?
I have done some teaching how to grow natives from seed, but I do a lot of tours throughout the garden and tell people what we're doing and show them the insects that are in there. The big thing for the museum is Heritage Day, and there are a lot of children that come. Then we have children's activities, and we show them there's insects that are in the gardens and tell them their life cycles, and they really find that interesting.
What are you working on right now?
Well, we're doing paving. I'm trying to bulk up the number of native plants so we can, because when insects use plants, they need more than just one plant. So I'm trying to do that and increase the diversity of plants that we have in here.
And how about butterflies?
Butterflies, we don't see as many as we'd like to. We need to get more plants in here and also try to get maybe the neighbors to try to grow some of these plants and make corridors. That's all around the county and all. They're working on native habitat. So if we can connect those through corridors like walking paths or through waterways, then the insects will have ways to use those corridors, and then we have more of them in our yard.
How about birds? Do you get involved with migratory birds at all?
Yes, we have a lot of birds in the mountains that nest in the mountains. The bluebirds are nesting right over there. We really have a lot of birds. And we also have near here, about 40 minutes away, there is a place where people go to watch hawks migrate. And also, as they were doing that, they saw dragonflies migrating and butterflies migrating way higher. It's up on the edge of a mountain. So we have a lot of things that migrate through here.
You know, I knew about bird watchers. I knew about butterfly people. Then I realized they're dragonfly people. That's their whole life. That's their specialty.
And sometimes they're the same person.
Right. Rio Grande Valley, they were saying, is an evolutionary process for some. They'll hit their life list and check off every North American bird. Then they move on to butterflies. Then they go through that, and then they move into dragonflies.
And we are very unique here because we have northern populations and southern populations that meet here, like overlap with some of the plants. Mm-hmm. But we're one of the hot spots for salamanders.
Oh, yeah. And in Tennessee, the national park, I think there a lot of them there.
Yeah, that's the part of the Smoky Mountains you're talking about.
Yeah.
We're very fortunate where we live that we have all that.
Yes. Do you have the really interesting flies that?
Are you talking about hoverflies? Oh, I have a friend that's really into hoverflies.
Really? Anyway,
yeah. So the hoverflies that's the cirrhids, and they're some of them are common, but they eat aphids, and a lot of people don't realize that they're actually not bees, that they're flies.
So they're helper.
Yeah, they eat aphids and stuff. So if we don't spray things, if we just leave nature alone, it kind of balances out. Mm. And that's one thing we do. We're excited when we see holes in our plants. If we see a circle in a red bud, that means the leafcutter bee. It makes a little circle, it rolls it up like a cigar, stuffs it somewhere, and lays its egg with pollen and nectar.
Oh, wow.
I know. When you learn the life cycles. And when you learn that, when you teach kids, like there's a wasp that emerges in August for Heritage Day. Mm-hmm. It's called the digger wasp. And that wasp parasitizes the grub in the ground and lays its egg there. And then it emerges in August. They don't emerge till August. And when you show kids that and tell them that, this one little boy said, "Can I pet it?" Because it doesn't use its stinger to sting you. It uses its stinger to parasitize its prey. So then the life cycles, if you can just get kids to hear those life cycles, they change. And parents listening sometimes are pretty surprised too. So,
And how about the little flies that they have the lantern, they light up?
Oh, the light bugs. You don't have lightning bugs out in California.
No.
No, we do here.
Over in Tennessee, there's that place where they learn to synchronize their flashing.
Yeah, and it's another problem we have because we have light pollution. And we're having huge development around here. And that light pollution doesn't just affect the lightning bugs, but it also affects moths because they orientate themselves by the moonlight. And so if all this light, that's why they go to them, they get confused. That's not good to have all that light pollution. But yes, we're very fortunate we have lightning bugs.
They're really cool.
Yes, and they're called glowworms. You heard the little song, Grow a Little.
Yeah.
Because they're in the ground, you can find them, and those little larvae will glow too.
Really?
Yeah.
How cool. How about a couple of your other favorite that people kind of miss, don't understand?
Well, honeybee is not a native bee. But we have a lot of really, really cool native bees. And one of my favorites is the cut-leaf bee that I told you about. instead of collecting pollen on its legs, it has hairs on underneath its abdomen, and it collects pollen there.
Oh, that's really cool. So you have fun in the garden, don't you?
Yes. I'm a volunteer, and if I'm not having fun, I'm going home.
Yeah. Well, you have a lot of friends in the garden.
Yes, that got us through COVID. It was really wonderful. Yes, we could work outside together, and we make friends because there's people who come live in our community. They have grandchildren or something, and so they join the Master Gardeners and Master Naturalists, and or just join the museum and help with volunteer. So, yes, we get to know a lot of people. Friends in the garden.
What's in your museum here?
Well, it's art, and also we have the historical things. Right now there's an exhibit about the funerals, and then it's in an old bank, so they have, for the art part, they've taken the deposit box and people have made little tiny miniatures in the deposit box, and they change occasionally the different...
That's the history museum that was a bank?
Yes, yeah. And it used to be here, and so they change the exhibits quite often. They've had some about the trains, because that's a big part. We had a wonderful photographer who had a lot of pictures in Life magazine. He has a museum in Roanoke. They had an exhibit on him. There's a guy that came and speak to us about things that happened in Floyd with the lumber company and how they did that, and just all kinds of things about our history that some of us don't know about, you know, so it's kind of...
And going way back to the Civil War.
Before the Civil War, you know, the people that came here learned from Native Americans, too. They were like apple butter and made apple butter. They made all their own stuff and stuff. And they used a lot of native plants. They knew how to use the native plants.
So anything else you want to share?
We'll talk about history. We have, after the Civil War, a Union soldier started a school for the black community. And he was also one of those people that was to make sure that the blacks were treated correctly. So for 30 years, he had it up on Hill Street here. And it was had classic, they taught Greek, and they had a lot of classical learning. Then he was going to have to turn it over to somebody else. Booker T. Washington came here. And Booker T. Washington was born in Virginia. He came here, Tuskegee is where he had his school. And he helped them start, encourage them to do technical. It was controversial because they'd had a classical training and now they were going to go to technical training. That was 200 acres, and that's called Christiansburg Institute. It's been here. It's closed when they integrated the schools in 1965 or 66, and those children were very well trained, actually better than some of the, and we have good schools, better than some of the schools that they integrated into. They were very well versed and have gone on to do many things throughout history that are important to leaders in the community.
That's really cool. To learn more about your world here, do you have a website?
Yes, the Montgomery Museum has a website, yes. And they have a Facebook.
And your name, your full name?
Elizabeth Sandy Umberger.
With a Z.
With a Z.
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York, and in fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.